My name is Lyndon McKinney, and I am an alcoholic.
Hi,
oh, it's so nice to be here. I really want to thank Charles and the committee for inviting me here today. It's really so wonderful to be here, and it's an honor to be asked to do anything in Alcoholics Anonymous, but for me it's also a freedom to be able to stand up behind this podium, because for so long I was unable to do that because of the overwhelming fear that I had. And so, and I'll get into that a little bit later, but I do want to thank the committee. And I want to thank Dennis for last night. Dennis is from South Carolina, and Libra. We see each other at home groups and different meetings around, and you have a powerful message, and I appreciate that. I got a lot out of it. My husband is Bob, and he sends his greetings. He was unable to be here today. We are going through a very exciting time right now. Our daughter, his daughter, but my stepdaughter, who I think is my daughter as well, is getting married on May the 22nd. And it's pretty exciting, and you know, all those kind of crazy feelings. I don't know. I've never gone through a wedding before except for mine. Two of mine, and but this is pretty exciting, and there are some friends that are giving her a party tonight, and you know, and we have our other daughter that's coming in with the grandchildren, so he's at home now, and but he does send his greetings. I was telling somebody last night, I said, you know, your daughter only gets married once, and then I stopped and I thought, well, she's in AA, and that's not necessarily true, is it? but it is pretty exciting. But you know, my husband, I just have to tell you, I love him more than anything in this world. He's just such a sweetheart, and he's in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he really misses being here because he loves the program. And I called him this morning. I was really nervous, and I called him just to say, you know, hello, and you know, I'm nervous, and I love you, and you know, and he sat there and he says, well, honey, you know, and I thought he was going to say, honey, you're just going to do a great job, and he says, relax, you're not that important. I said, now wait a minute, you know. You know, he is something else. He retired in October. Now, I'm still working, but he retired in October, and the first four days of that week, Monday through Thursday, he was wonderful. And he said, he got up, and he fixed my coffee, and he fixed my breakfast. And I thought, hey, this isn't bad, you know. And then on Friday, I noticed he was still in the bed, and I shook him, and I said, Bob. And he looked up, and he said, the guilt has faded. So anyway, he is another alcoholic, but I love him dearly. But I left Bob at home, but I brought a very dear friend of mine here today and to spend the night last night and come, and this is Lisa, and I'd like for you to meet Lisa. Stand up, Lisa. One of the true blessings of Alcoholics Anonymous, in my opinion, is to be able to meet friends, to be able to have friends and develop relationships. And when Bob was unable to come, I called Lisa and said, would you like to come with me? And she said yes. And so we were able to travel to Atlanta, and it was funny. Yesterday we had all these directions, and we made it through the traffic, which was wonderful because I'm, you know, I was nervous, you know, white knuckling and all, and made it through the traffic and until we got lost, actually. And, you know, I just told her, I said, you know, Lisa, I said, now, I am not your sponsor right now. I'm not supposed to make mistakes like this, but we got to see Marietta and drove all around. So anyway, we've had a great time. My sobriety date is October the 1st, 1983, and for that I'm truly grateful. And thank you. When I was about a year in the program, I was on the answering service for Alcoholics Anonymous, and I had a call from a lady, and she said, her name was Heidi, I'll never forget her, and she said, Libba, she said, could you take me to some meetings? And I said that I'd be glad to. She said she had a drinking problem. So I took her to some meetings, and unfortunately she never really maintained any sobriety, but we became friends, and about 6 months or so, I guess, she just left, and I didn't hear from her again for about 5 years. And then 5 years later, I remember it like it was yesterday. 5 years later, the phone rang, and I was sitting at home, and she said, Libba, she says, I am, do you remember who I am? And I said, yes, I do. And she said, well, I want you to know something. She says, I am drinking right now. And she says, I'm not in a blackout, and I'm not incoherent, but I am drinking. She said, I just have to ask you a couple of questions. And I said, sure. And she said, are you drinking anything right now? And I said, no, I'm not. And she says, have you had anything to drink since I last spoke with you? And I said, no, I haven't. And there was a long pause on the telephone. And she said, Alcoholics Anonymous really works, doesn't it? And I was so grateful to be able to say, yes, that Alcoholics Anonymous was working in my life then, and it continues to work in my life today. And I tell that story every time I tell my story, because what it does is it puts my life into proper perspective, and it helps me to remember who I am and what I am, and that is that I am an alcoholic, and that is, without a doubt, the most important thing in my life. It's more important than my marriage. It's more important than my job. It's more important than anything in this world to me. Because you see, if I ever, ever let it slide down that priority scale, I know what this alcoholic would do. And that's, I would probably drink, and then I would lose it all. I would lose my family. I would lose everything. But I stop and I think about that, and I think, why am I sober today? And I think it's because I really and truly try to practice the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous in all of my affairs. Yesterday, as a matter of fact, I have a pretty stressful job, and I spend a lot of time at work, a lot of time at work. And I was had to meet with several people that were big shots, you know, and all these character defects just glare at me sometimes. And I was nervous. I was really nervous. And I was on my way to work, and I called Bob. And I said, Bob, I am so nervous. My heart was pounding. And I said, would you read the seventh step prayer to me? And he got out the book, and he did. And you know, and where else but in Alcoholics Anonymous? I didn't feel funny calling my husband asking me to do that. But all of a sudden, a sense of peace came over me, and I was able to walk in that meeting. And I had already done my meditation and prayer that morning, yesterday morning. This was just something a little bit extra. And I think it's because I try to practice those. My sponsor has taught me how to practice these principles into all of my affairs, and for that I'm grateful. I do have a home group. My home group is the New Beginnings Group, and we meet on Monday and Friday nights in Greenville, South Carolina. And I sure hope Lisa's a member of that home group, and you know, I hope we were missed last night. I really do, because that we're both. I'm very committed to that home group. Lisa's committed, and I, you know, I love that home group, and I try to make coffee, and I try to do the things that are necessary for me to stay sober. I greet people and chair meetings and do all of those things. And you know, I truly believe that the big book says that we are selfish and self-centered, and one, the ultimate for me would be for me to have 15 years ago to come into the program and take and take and take and never give back and never continue to go and not continue to go to meetings. So for me, it's very important that I do that to get out of myself. I do have a sponsor. My sponsor's name is Mary, and I love Mary so much. Mary and I don't see each other that often. We talk on the phone, but we don't see each other. We go to different meetings, but I love her so much. She helps me to put my life together in so many ways. She always tells me, she says, Libba, sometimes you just remind me of a kitten playing with a ball of yarn. And I said, what are you talking about? And she says, you know what a kitten does. A kitten gets that ball of yarn and gets that yarn and just unravels it everywhere and just can't seem to get it back together. And she says, just stop. And let's just take it one at a time and put that yarn back together and let's make a sweater. And you know, she just tells me things like that, and I love her dearly. But she also tells me, she says, Lib, it's all in the willingness to do the things you don't want to do. She says, that's how you grow in this program. It's the willingness to do the things you don't want to do. And you see, standing up here in front of you today, it's not real easy for me. My hands are still all sweaty. And in fact, I always think about this when I get up here. Is, you know, women will probably understand. Men probably won't. But, you know, sometimes I relate standing up here behind the podium is like going to a gynecologist. You just never get used to it. You know, and you don't. Well, I don't anyway. And, you know, so my hands are all sweaty and all. But because I am willing, because of a faith in a higher power and the willingness on my part, I'm able to stand up here and share with you what I was like, what happened to me, and what I'm like today. I was born in a little town called Greenwood, South Carolina, in 1953. And I was born into a home that was very loving and kind, and my parents were wonderful. They loved me and my sister, who was 2 years older than I am. They loved us the same. We had different perceptions about life, and my sister's not an alcoholic, and my mother's not an alcoholic. My father is deceased, but he died about 5 or 6 years ago, but I would imagine that he was an alcoholic. He just quit drinking. And I didn't grow up in an alcoholic home, but I believe because of some of the things he said, and I'll get into that a little bit later, that he probably was an alcoholic. But my parents taught us of a loving God and a forgiving God. I still have the same God today that I had when I was a little girl. We just connect a little bit differently today. And my parents were wonderful. They really were. They taught us good morals and or tried to instill in good morals. They tried to instill education and all of those things that to be a good person and to do right things. And so I had a good life growing up. Now, but I may not have grown up in an alcoholic home, but I grew up in the ism part. My daddy didn't drink all the time. I have seen him drunk on occasions, but I grew up in the ism part of this disease, and that's because my mother is a child of an alcoholic. My father has two brothers that are alcoholics. I have aunts and uncles and cousins that just runs rampant in our family. And along with that comes those character defects and those low self-esteem and people-pleasing attitude and sensitivity and, you know, all of those kind of things. What I heard my parents say, my sister didn't hear it, but what I heard was, Libba, you just take those feelings and you stuff them. And you stuff them way down deep inside. And don't you ever, ever let anybody know what you're feeling. And you see, I could do that. I could put a smile on my face and I could make you think that everything was great. And I can still do that today. Fortunately for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm able to come in here and I'm able to share with you, you know, what I'm really like and what's going on inside of me. I remember the album or the song Gary Lewis by Gary Lewis and the Playboys said, everybody loves a clown. The clown's always laughing on the outside and dying on the inside. Well, that's what I was doing. You know, I'd bite my fingernails and I'd shake my foot at just sitting down in nervousness, and I'd have this horrible feeling deep down inside of me, and I hadn't even started drinking yet, and those were the feelings that I had. I never felt a part of. I never felt like I fit in. You know, my parents though, my mother, when I came into the program, my mother and father have always supported me. They've always supported me with this program and never have told me, don't go to Alcoholics Anonymous. But just to give you an idea of what I grew up with, and you know, I just love my mama to death. She's just as cute as she can be, but she said, let's just assume that Mom and I are going to the mall shopping, and we're out shopping at the mall, and we're walking down, and all of a sudden, Lisa walks up. And my mother will look at me, and I will introduce Mama. This is Lisa. Lisa, this is my mother, Doris, you know. And then Lisa will walk off, and my mother will look at me, and she'll turn and kind of look around, and she'll say, now, is she in BB? And I say, Mother. Now, the reason my mother says BB is because she doesn't want anybody in the mall to hear her say AA. I mean, heaven forbid if anybody knew her daughter was in BB. So, you know, but that's the way my mom is. You know, she is such a trip. She is dating somebody now, and she's seeing someone, a friend is what she calls it. She's so happy. She's so spiritual, and he has taken her to Rome, but they sleep in other separate bedrooms. She told me to tell y'all that. And he's taken her to Las Vegas and to the beach, and she's just having the time of her life in separate bedrooms. So, but she is a doll, and I love her to death. I really do. Our life, just growing up. I, as I had mentioned to you, I felt inferior. I didn't feel like I fit in. I assume I was popular. I was invited to go to join sororities. I was invited to dances and on dates, but I never felt like I belonged. I never felt I could carry on a conversation with people. I always felt intimidated. I always had those horrible feelings, but yet nobody ever knew it because I always had that smile on my face. And I remember I was a junior in high school, and I was, this is the first time to my knowledge that I had ever had a drink, and I was invited to go to a fraternity party, and it was at the Belmont Drive-In Theater, and everybody was drinking, and my date turned around to me, and he says, how about a rum and coke? And I said, all right. And I didn't think about my mom and dad's feelings. I didn't think about anybody. I just wanted to fit in. And he said, now, Libby, if you take that rum and coke and you drink it really, really fast, you're going to get really, really drunk. And he says, but you're going to have a really good time. And I took that rum and coke, and I drank it really, really fast. And I got really, really drunk. And I had a really good time, I think. I have no idea, because, you see, I blacked out the very first time I ever drank. blacked out, thought that's what everybody did. And I woke up in the next morning, and you know, I didn't care about what my parents thought. The only thing that I knew is that all of a sudden that knot in my stomach had gone away. And I didn't have to bite my fingernails anymore. And I didn't have to shake my foot anymore. And all of a sudden I looked and I could talk to people. And I didn't feel intimidated anymore. And I have found my friend alcohol. And I started to hang around with people that were older than me, and they were in college, and they would come home, and they would pick me up, and we would go out, and we would drink. And once I drank one, it triggered that obsession for me to drink more and more, and I would get drunk, and I would black out. And that's just the way I drank, pretty much the whole time I ever drank. And my drink of choice was beer. I absolutely loved beer. I would drink and guzzle beer, and I see some guys in here, but I tell you what, I could flat drink some beer, too. And that was my drink of choice. And just to show you how sick attracts sick, I was I fell in love with a guy that had dropped out of middle school, not even high school. He dropped out of middle school, but boy was he cute. And I thought, well, you know, he wanted me. And I thought, hey, this is something. But how sick he was, and I didn't realize it, that, you know, he abused me in every way that one can be abused. He abused me physically and mentally and emotionally, sexually, every way that one could be abused. And the sad part about that is that I kept going back for more because I thought that that's what I deserved. And I'm so grateful to the God of my understanding today because he took that guy away from me, and I probably would have married him, and no telling where I would be today. But, you know, that's the way it was. And I graduated from high school. In my family, after you graduated, you had to go to college. I didn't have a choice, and I went kicking and screaming too. I was a rebel, and I went kicking and screaming, and I didn't want to go. But then when I got there and realized that I could drink and have fun, I said, hey, this sounds like, you know, this is pretty good. And that's what I did. I went to a little junior college, and I drank and I drank, and I'd spray this cheap perfume all over me, and we'd come in, and we, you know, they'd say they couldn't smell it, but they sure did look drunk. And, you know, and they'd try to talk to me, and I wouldn't listen. I got put on probation and all kind of things like that. And I finished those 2 years, and I said, you know, I don't want to go back. And I moved back home with Mom and Daddy, and this is when I met my first husband. And I met him, and he was a junior at Clemson. And we fell in love, and we decided to get married. And I'll never forget that I drank. I was drinking through that wedding, but I'll never forget that wedding day. And I had the long white gown on, and I remember standing there with my daddy, and I was walking down the aisle, and I thought I could never be so happy. I could never be so happy as I am right this minute. But you see, I didn't know about alcoholism. I didn't know where the disease of alcoholism would take me and all the things that would happen to me. I was in total, total denial. And I got married, we got married, and we moved to Clemson, and he drank just like I did. You know, sick attracts sick. He drank just like I did. And I remember we drank and we partied all the time. And he would go to class, and I was taking a few classes and working part-time. And we had $10 left one time for a month. And what we did was we spent it going to happy hour. That was the way we chose to live our lives. And everything was just rocking along really smooth until I found out I was pregnant. And that was reality that hit me square in the face because, you see, all these morals that my parents had tried to instill in me, all the morals and all the responsibility, I had just tucked away on the back burner. And I found out I was pregnant, and I got scared. And I went to the doctor, and I said, you know, to the doctor, I have drank, I have gotten drunk, I have done, I have smoked pot. I don't consider myself a drug addict, but I had smoked pot. I had done a lot of speed and smoking cigarettes, and I was about 8 weeks pregnant. And I said, I will abort this child if it means that something's going to happen to him. And the doctor assured me that everything would be okay if I would just stay off of everything. And I did. I quit doing everything for the remainder of the 9 months. My husband continued to drink, and we continued to argue, though. And you see, I was dry. But and this should have been the happiest time of my life, and it was the most miserable time of my life. And I started to cry every day, and I'd pray, and I'd say, Dear God, please, please don't let anything happen to my baby. And if you will let my baby be okay, I promise you, I will be good. Because you see, that's what I thought that I was. I thought I was a bad person. I didn't know that I was just a sick person. And my son was born, and he was born very healthy, and today I'm very grateful for that. He was born healthy, and And I kept my promise to God only for about 2 months, not very long. But my husband came to me and he asked me, he said, he told me that he wanted a divorce. Now he and I had caused a lot of things to end this marriage as well, but I was devastated and I hated the failure. I hated to admit that to people that I had failed and I had to get drunk because you see, I had to ease that pain. And I ended up getting drunk and I left and I went over to my parents' house. I had nowhere to go and I took my son and I stayed over there not telling anyone what had happened with my marriage because of that failure that I had had. And I started to lose weight and I didn't have a job and my parents came to me and I know there's some Al-Anons in here and I do respect Al-Anons so much and my mother is not an Al-Anon but I don't know what in the world I would have done if they hadn't done this for me, but she came to me and she said, "Honey, you have lost all kind of weight. You have no skills, no job skills or anything." And she said, "You really, you know, if you will go back to school and graduate, we will provide all of that for you. We will pay for it. We'll put you in an apartment and we'll let you get on with your life." And you know what I heard? An apartment. I can drink the way I want to. And I did. I moved into an apartment. How selfish of me. I moved into an apartment with my son. And I enrolled at the University of South Carolina at Spartanburg, and I ended up partying all the time. And I was taking classes, but I partied and I drank, and I'd go out, and you know, I would date people only if they drank the way I did. And I didn't want to have anything to do with people that didn't drink like I did. And I had one guy to say, "Libby, you know, I really enjoy your company, but you are real expensive too." You know, because at this point, you know, I could flat drink some beer, and that's all I wanted to do. And so that's what my life was like. I did graduate, though. I graduated with an early childhood degree, and I started teaching first grade, excuse me, at a very affluent school. And I knew I needed to be on my P's and Q's because all the parents there didn't work. The moms didn't. They played tennis, and they would come in, and they'd check me out and all this, and they'd come in and look at me and say, you know, just checking me out. And there were some friends that would always go to the bars afterwards, some teachers, and they'd say, "Would you like to go?" And I'd say yes. And at this point of my life and drinking career, I knew that there was something wrong. And I'd say, "Libby, you're going to be a lady. You see, that's what I always wanted to be, was a lady." And I'd say, "You're going to be a lady. You're not going to get drunk. You're going to be okay." And so what I did was I would go out to the blockhouse with them, and I'd drink two or three drinks just like they did. But you see, once I drank one, it triggered that obsession for me to drink more and more. And what I would do was I'd go pick up my son at a daycare or the nursery, and then I'd stop at the 7-Eleven, and I'd buy a couple of six-packs of beer, and I'd go home. And I'd put him to bed. I'd feed him, and I'd put him to bed. And that was the extent of it. And then I'd have to drink. And by this time, I was having to set my alarm, and I'd have to get out my clothes before I started drinking for the next day and do everything, because once I started drinking, I didn't know what would happen to me at all. Now, I am in education, and it's real ironic. Today I am in, I say God just definitely has a sense of humor. Today I no longer teach, but I coordinate a parenting program of parents who have children birth to 5 years old. And I think that is just such a hoot. You know, here I was. If these parents knew that I was drunk the first 7 years of my child's life. But, you know, that's what God does. And that's what I'm doing now, is going out and working with parents and parent educators. But because I'm in education and because I have done some research on this, I know the importance of at least the first 3 years, or if not the first 7 years of a child's life, and how very, very important those years are. Well, I wasn't there for my son, and that was really hard for me to come to grips with through the program. You know, and through, because of that, he's had some problems along the way, and I know that, and I have to accept that in my life. And I don't know what I would do if I hadn't had my mother. My mother was there for my son when I was not able to be. You know, God was looking after him, and I am so, so very grateful for that. But I had a call from a friend, and she said, "Libba, would you like to go out with this blind date?" And I said, "Well, okay." I really didn't want to, but you see, I'm a people pleaser too. And I'd gone out with one of her friends, and he was a real jerk. He wouldn't even let me dance with anybody but him, and I just didn't like him at all, and he certainly didn't drink the way I drank. Well, this guy, I said, "Okay." So I put on a white wool suit. I'll never forget it. And I had on those high heels, and I had about three or four drinks, and I opened the door, and there he stood. The most gorgeous man I have ever laid my eyes on. He had credit cards, He had a company car. He was 14 years older than me, and I said, I have died and gone to heaven. I need a rich old man is what I need. Well, that rich old man's at home with our daughters today, and I'm still working, and he's retired. Somehow it just didn't work out that way, did it? But he and I just, as he says in his story, we just fell in sick, and that's what we did. We fell in sick, and we started to date, and he moved in shortly after, and so you see, Bob drank just the way I did. Bob didn't care how much I drank. He drank all the time, and he didn't care one bit about the way I drank. And we were bar drinkers. Oh, let me give you a scenario of what our life was really like for the next 3 years. We would go into the bar, and I would teach school, and then I'd come home for the day. And he's a salesman, so he had his office at the apartment. And I would come home, and we'd have a drink and say, come on, let's go to the bars. And I'd get my mother to come pick up my son. Or we'd take him over there drinking and driving many, many times. And we'd go to the bar, and oh, it was wonderful. We would start dancing, and it was just so romantic, and oh, it was just wonderful. Until we drank one too many drinks, and then we crossed over into a blackout, and we started yelling and screaming at each other and calling each other horrible names. And then we'd wake up the next morning full of guilt and remorse, and I'd go off to teach school. And he would stay at home and work or do whatever. And I would come home that afternoon, and we would say we were sorry, and we'd have that one drink again. Oh, everything was good again. And he said, let's go on to the bar. Let's have a good time. And we'd go out to the bar, and we'd dance, and we'd be so romantic, and it would be wonderful, until we drank one too many. And then we crossed over into a blackout, and we would yell, and we would scream, and we would call each other horrible, horrible names. This didn't go on one night or two nights. It went on night after night after night after night for the next 3 years of our lives. And at this point, my son was having horrible nightmares. And he would wake up in the middle of the night, and sometimes I would hear him and sometimes I wouldn't. And I would hear him waking up, and he would be yelling out to the top of his lungs, screaming and hollering like there was a bloody animal or something coming to get him, and he would get his little hands and he would start just fighting it off. And I would think, what is wrong with him? Why is he acting like that? And you see, that little boy was suffering from the same thing that I was suffering from, and that's alcoholism. Only he had never had a drink, and that's what this was doing to our family. And we were just to him and to me, and here we were living together, and our life was a mess. You know, I say I've never had a DUI, but I have gotten stopped. Bob and I, he got stopped once and had, he got a DUI. I got stopped once, and the guy said, have you been drinking? And I just decided to put that little southern accent on him, and I said, why, no, not much. And he says, well, you need to get out and walk this line. So I decided, okay, I'll do that. And that's when you wear these spike high heels, you know, and the short dresses, and I just twitched it. And he said, okay, now you go on home, don't you ever do this again. I said, oh, I promise I won't ever do this again. You know, and that I thought, I got out of it one more time. I got out of it just one more time. Well, Bob got stopped once, and this is the sickness of my disease. The insanity. He got stopped. We were coming home from a bar, and the policeman said, okay, you know, get in the car. They took him off, and I said, I'll be right there. And I went home, and I said, he drinks vodka and Gatorade, and I didn't have any beer, so I got a big old bottle of vodka, and I drank one great big old glassful, and I put it in the car seat, and I drove off to the police station going to help my boyfriend because he got put in jail. And here I was, you know, every hour, on the hour, I'd go outside. And every hour I would drink a great big glass of vodka. Because, you see, once I drank one, it triggered that obsession for me to drink more. And I didn't care where I was. And when he finally got out in the mid-morning, 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, whatever, and we went home and we started to talk about the alcoholic, you know, can you believe you got a DUI and da-da-da-da-da, and all of these kind of things. And I fell asleep. I passed out. And the secretary of the school called, and she said, where are you? This was about 8:30, and I said, oh, you see, and all those feelings had returned. I had those knots in my stomach again. I was biting my fingernails again. All of that, the alcohol wasn't working for me anymore. And I said, well, my mother had to keep, I was up with Robbie all night, my son, and he was sick and made up some excuse. And I hung up, and I thought, what's happening to me? What's happening to my life? And it was my son's 7th birthday about 3 weeks later. And I'll never forget, I had asked Bob if he would please go and get a birthday cake for Rob. And he said, of course. You know, his intentions were always wonderful. His actions were not. And so he said that he would. I got up and I went to school that morning and I took Rob to school. And I came home and of course there wasn't a birthday cake. And something just told me, Libba, I'm just sick and tired of living like this. And I wrote him a letter. And I said, Dear Bob, he was passed out in the bedroom. And I said, Dear Bob, get out of our lives. I am so sick of living like this. Just get out of our lives. And I took my son by the hand and I took him to the Family Mart to get that birthday cake. And as we were getting the birthday cake, all of a sudden I turned around and there was Bob. And he was yelling and he was screaming and he was calling me all kinds of names. And he was very, very drunk. And I looked at him and I said, and I started yelling and I started screaming and I called him all kinds of names. And I wasn't drunk. And I looked down at my little son on his 7th birthday. And I remembered him just 3 weeks prior patting me on the shoulder saying, Mama, if you just don't drink, everything's going to be okay if you just don't drink. And I looked around at all of the people that had stopped in the grocery store and were staring at us, and I said, I have turned into nothing but trash. That's all I am. I am nothing but trash. Where are those morals? Where are those morals that my mom and dad tried so desperately to instill in me? And that night, God did for us what we could not do for ourselves. And Bob went to treatment. That was it the whole time. Bob needed to go to treatment, not me. He was the drunk, not me. Well, he called his boss, and his boss put him in the back seat of the car and brought him here to Atlanta, Georgia, to Charter Hospital. And we poured him in the back seat with this gallon of alcohol, vodka, and his Gatorade, and I sipped on a beer. What a lady. I sipped on a beer, one beer, all the way down to Atlanta. And Lewis, after we dropped Bob off at the hospital, Lewis, his boss, said, Libba, you have been through so much. Won't you please, please just stay with me and Patty tonight? And I said, oh, Lewis, I have been through a lot, but I need to stay by myself. I checked into the Holiday Inn, and I proceeded to get very, very drunk. I went to the bar, and I was sitting there telling the bartender all about my boyfriend being in treatment as I guzzled those beers, you know, just guzzling away. And I felt so guilty about that I bought the beer and like $9 a six-pack or something unreal, and I went back to the room, and I don't remember anything that night, and I don't remember checking out of the hotel, and I don't remember driving home from Atlanta to Greenville, and that was on a Friday, and I woke up at my friend Debbie's house on Sunday, and she said, why don't you go to a meeting? And I went to a meeting on that Sunday night, and I did pick up a white chip, and I'd like to tell you that was the only one, but it's not. You see, my birthday is October the 1st, 1983, and Bob's is September the 17th, 1983. But if I knew then what I know now, he would not have 2 weeks longer than me in the program. He would, but he does, and that's okay. But I continued to drink for a couple of weeks, and finally I just got sick and tired of living that kind of life, and I knew that something was wrong with me. You see, I had never gone into the hospital. I had never had a DUI. I had never been in jail. I had never, all those yets had not happened to me, and they still haven't today. And I say yet, and I mean that, because I know that if I ever let the thought that I am not an alcoholic slide down the priority scale, I would drink. But that's what, that's what happened, and I finally gave up. Now, I'm sitting in an AA meeting, and I finally picked up that chip, this chip of surrender, and I felt it deep within my heart. And I picked that chip up, and you take away the alcohol from me, and I'm still here. And I was scared to death. I was scared to death. I was overwhelmed with fear. And here comes Bob out of treatment. Here comes Mr. AA. I mean, who is this man I've been living with for 3 years? I don't even know who he is. And here I am, so shy, so scared to death. And he's saying, come on, honey, let's go to AA. He says, Libba, tell me, what do you think that they thought of me when I talked to him about humility tonight? And, you know, I'd sit there, and he would say all of these things, and everybody, he wanted to share all the time, and I didn't want to say a word, and he intimidated me so bad. I didn't want to go to meetings with him, but I didn't want to go without him because I was afraid somebody else would want him. But if you could have seen him when he got out of treatment, you wouldn't have wanted him. how much, I didn't realize how much weight he had gained and all kind of things, but But we kept going to meetings. We kept going to meetings together, and we did what everybody told us to do, and that was just to pray and to ask God to help us, and go to meetings. And that's what I did. And our lives were going okay, and they were going pretty good, and we were learning to live with each other again, and We were getting to know each other sober. And we decided to get married, and we were married about a year into the program. And we had a beautiful wedding, and I remember this wedding, and it was very, very sweet. It was very small, and it was a very nice wedding. And everything was going great until about the second year of our marriage, and all of a sudden we started yelling and we started screaming. And he slammed the door one day, and he went to his sponsor's house, and his sponsor suggested that we do our prayer and meditation together. And he came home and he says, "Are you willing to do this?" And we were still very angry with each other, and we haven't worked, you know, a lot of this stuff out. And I said, "Well, I'm willing." And I was embarrassed because I had never prayed with anybody before. I was just embarrassed and humiliated, you know, just all of it together. And I didn't want to do that. And he said, and we both agreed, "Let's try it." So we started by reading the 24-hour day book, and we read that together. And then we held hands and we prayed the Lord's Prayer together, and the third step prayer together. And then we said a little prayer of each of our own. Now I used to laugh at the billboards that say that families that pray together stay together, and I don't laugh at that anymore, because that has been the foundation of our marriage. No lightning has struck, bolts or anything like that, but what that's done for us, and we have done our prayer and meditation together every morning, and we get on our knees every single morning together, and what that's done is that we have grown together. We have grown together, and I'm not jealous of him anymore. I don't worry about him going to meetings without me. In fact, sometimes, you know, I can be out of town and he'll for work, and he'll say, "Well, where are you?" Or he can be out of town and say, "Well, where are you? Do you want to know where I am?" And you know, and it's just because I trust him so much, and our lives have grown together. He has his program, and I have my program. But we have a program together as well, and you know, we go to the same home group, but we go into separate meetings. And recovery is the foundation. Being with God is the foundation of our marriage, and we invited my son to do this, and he has shared with us and done meditation for many years as well. But Bob's a sweetheart, and I hope that one day you'll get to meet him if you haven't already. Bob has two children. Bob has two children, one Kelly. Kelly's the one that's getting married, and she has 8 years in the program, and she's marrying Steve, who has 3 years in the program, so we are definitely an AA family. Steve is just so wonderful, and I had a birthday a couple of weeks ago when he called, and he said, "I just wanted to wish my mother, future mother-in-law a happy birthday," and we talk AA, and it's really neat. Bob did say this, though. I will tell you this, so you'll know that he's just not totally perfect. We were sitting there, and he hasn't said anything about spending money. I mean, you know, when somebody gets married, all of a sudden you got more money than you think you really have, you know. And I started spending money buying, you know, wedding dresses and this and that and this and that. And he said, "Honey, I just want you to know," he said, "I have tried really hard not to say anything about spending money. Are you spending money?" And I said, "You have, and you've done real well too. I appreciate it." And he said, "I really have. Now, I've tried really hard." And I said, "I know that, and you've done really well." And he says, "Well, I just have one question to ask you." And I said, "Okay." He said, "Now look at me." And I knew then, and so I looked up at him and I said, "Yes." And he said, "Are you taking advantage of the situation?" I said, "Who, me? Of course not." But it is an exciting time, and Kelly's asked me to help with the wedding, and she's just a doll, and we are very, very close, and I love her a lot. His other daughter, Susan. Susan lives in Raleigh, North Carolina, and has two children and our grandchildren. And it's taken a long time for Susan and I to come together, but we have, and it's been really nice to see how we've started to grow together. It's taken a long time, though, and I know that there's a lot more mending to do and healing to do. And so, you know, I think that it just takes time. What Bob always says is, "Time is things I must earn," and I think that that's so true, that it just takes time for things to happen the way that they're supposed to. My son Rob, He is something else. He really is. He is 22 years old, and he is a senior at Clemson. And when he was when we first got sober, he was 7 years old. And soon after, we decided that he needed to go to Alateen. And so I gave him a choice. I said, you need to either go to Alateen or you need to go to Sunday school. You're going to go somewhere where you're going to hear about God for an hour a week, and then we're going to go to church. That's just the way it is. And he chose Alateen for a long time, and I'm real grateful for that because he learned a lot in Alateen. And we invited him. We didn't invite him. He was told that we were going to do our meditation together, and he did for years and years and years. We would all go into the kitchen together and do our prayer and meditation together, and we read out of the Alateen book for many, many years. That was our meditation book for the family. But then he chose not to go to Alateen, and he chose to go to church, and he started playing basketball for the Laurel Baptist Church, and we're Presbyterians, and so I had never been to a Baptist church, and he was playing basketball, and he soon started going on Wednesdays and then Sundays, and he says, Mom, will you and Bob support me at the Laurel Baptist Church? So I said, okay. Well, Bob always says that we're like Buzzard Baptists. We only go when somebody feeds us or somebody's getting married. But we said, okay, we would support him. So we got on the back row of the Laurel Baptist Church, and we started supporting my son. And one day, it was Mother's Day. He was about 16 years old, and it was Mother's Day. And, I was just real antsy to get out of there. You see, this preacher really went on and on and on, and it was about 10 after 12, and I thought, okay, it's lunchtime, you know. But Rob had his car, and we had a car, and we were to meet at my mother's. And I said, come on, Bob, let's just go. Rob knows where to go, and let's just leave. And he says, Libby, let's don't leave. He says, look. And I looked down. And there, standing down there in front of the whole congregation, was my son accepting God in his life. And I looked down, and as the congregation went down, I walked down there, and I looked at him, and he had a big tear in his eye. And he says, you know, Mom, he says, it just feels right. I don't care where my son finds God. As long as he finds God, that's okay with me. And so he continued to go to that church for a number of years, and has really accepted God in his life. And he was, I'm not very domestic. I am not very much of a cook. I will admit to that. And it was his senior year, and I was getting ready to go to, he was getting ready to go off to college. And I said, you know, what he's going to do is he is going to go off to college, and all of these friends of his are going to say, oh, I miss my mama's home cooking. And I thought, what is he going to say? So I start cooking all these meals and these casseroles, you know, and I'm getting them all ready. And he looked at me and he says, Mama, you don't have to do that. And he says, you know, it's a little late. And I said, well, yes, you're right. And I looked out, and Clint, our dog, had gained all this weight. He said, it's okay, Mom, you don't have to worry. But, you know, he came home one day, and he had been working landscape, and it was during the summer of through the last 4 years, and he had came home one day, and he was hot, and he was sweaty, and it was like 6 o'clock, and I had been working all day, and I came in, and Bob was out of town, and he looked at me, and he says, are we not going to eat dinner? And I said, oh my gosh, I forgot to cook it. And I said, come on, let's go out to eat. So he washed his hands, and he was all dirty though, and I didn't care, and we went to the Pelham Palace. And we were sitting there, and he knew I was nervous. And he said, Mama, don't worry about it. It's fine. And I said, Rob, I'm so sorry. I said, I really, you know, I've been working, and I just didn't think about fixing a meal tonight. And he says, you know something? He says, you may not be the greatest cook in the world. He says, but I will tell you something. He says, you have given me something that nobody can ever, ever take away. You've given me God. And, you know, I wouldn't trade that for anything in this world. And I've often wondered with him, what kind of a mother have I been? You know, I don't know. It's been the hardest job of my life. When I was pregnant, my mother said, being a mom is going to be a parent is the hardest thing you're ever going to have to do. And I often wondered about that. And it was his senior year in high school, and he was going to the senior prom, and he stands about 6'1", and he looked so handsome, and he had on his tux, and he just was so handsome looking. And I took him to the side, and I said, now his girlfriend was there and all, and I looked at him, and I said, I am so proud of you. And he leaned down, and he kissed me on my cheek. And he looked at me and he says, you did a good job, Mom. And, you know, I wouldn't take anything for that. Now, I'm going through a bit of a crisis with him right now. He is a senior at Clemson. He has one semester left at Clemson. And, Dennis, I could relate so much. I wish so badly that my son had been sitting in this audience last night. Because my son has one semester left now, and he came to me the other day and he says, I've decided to join the Army and not finish school. And you know, this was a few weeks ago, actually. And I just sat there, and I and my alcoholic personality and parent and everything, as I said, Rob, you need to finish school. You know, you've got to finish school. You've just got to finish school, you know, and da-da-da. And I went through the whole thing. And we were battling back and forth. And finally, I just turned it over, just like you told me to do. Just turn it over. And I let go of it, and I invited him to go out to dinner with me about a week ago. And Bob and I, Rob, we were sitting there at dinner, and I said, Rob, I have let go of this. I said, I have truly let go of this. If you are 22 years old, and I can't make you finish school, if this is what you want to do, you go right ahead. If this is what you want to do. But you know how I feel about it, but I am going to accept whatever you do, and I'm going to support you in whatever you do. I've let go. And what he did, he looked at me, and he says, you know what you've done to me? And I said, what? He said, you have taken away the opportunity for me to be a rebel. But he still may join the Army. I mean, he still may. So maybe Dennis can, being in hometown, you can go talk to him for me. I don't know. But I'm having to stay out of it. I have to let go of him with love. That's all I know. I have to let go of him with love. I've told you about my family. I've told you about situations. And I would be remiss if I didn't take a few minutes to tell you about me and how I've grown in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because, you see, that's the most important thing in the world. I can do all these things on the outside, and I can talk surface things. I can talk about my family. But what's really important is what's happening on me, with me on the inside. You see, I was 5 years sober, and I was absolutely a basket case. I was coming to meetings, and that was about all I was doing. And I thought, I was praying, but I thought, I need to, I'm like a merry-go-round. I need to do another fourth step and fifth step. And I had done one, but I didn't tell the whole truth. And so I found this lady, Mary, who is my sponsor today. And I said, will you listen to my fourth step? And she said she would. So I went over to her home, and I didn't really know her. And I went over to her home, and we were sitting there, and I started to share with her all the things that were happening in my life and in my fifth step. And she said, with the most loving, kind hands and heart and eyes, and she looked at me and held my hand, and she said, Libba, you need to go back to step one. And I looked at her with all the fear inside of me, and I said, Mary, I don't know how. I don't know how to go back to step one. I don't understand what these tools are that we use. I don't understand how to apply the steps in my life. And she didn't laugh at me and said, you say you're 5 years sober and you know, that's just too bad. She didn't do that. She said, you know, I will take you through the steps. And so step by one, she took me through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I am so grateful today for that, because what she did was she made me go home and she made me read about it and she made me write about that each step. And then we got together and we talked about it, and she explained things to me. And because of that, I'm able to apply those steps in my life on a daily basis. You know, I'm only in an AA meeting, you know, an hour or so. I'm at work 8 hours or more a day. And with my family, and I need to learn how to apply those steps in my life, and that's what she taught me how to do. And she taught me, she said, Libba, she said, if you don't let go of this fear that you have, she said, you might not get drunk. She says, but you will never, ever grow in this program. And you see, what happened was that I was very active in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was the secretary of my home group. I was the secretary of inner group. I was the secretary of the district. I was making coffee. I was greeting people. I was doing all of those things. But what I would not do is I would not get behind this podium. I was overwhelmed with fear. I wouldn't get behind the podium. I would not read. I would not give out chips or anything like that. And she says, Libby, you've got to overcome that fear. And she says, you've given God your alcoholism, your drinking. She says, give him everything. So I did. And I was about six and a half years sober. And I'll never forget, I got behind the podium at the traditional group. Sterling got me behind there. And I stood up and I shared my experience, strength, and hope. And I was nervous. But what happened was there was the freedom that came over me, that I walked through a fear. I was able to face a fear in sobriety. And that helped me more than anything. And you see, I wasn't sponsoring anybody.
I never sponsored anybody because people knew I was not willing to go to any length. And all of a sudden, the doors opened up, and beautiful people walked into my life, and it has been so wonderful. I mean, I am so excited today about being here. Three or four years ago, I came in contact with a beautiful young lady named Angela. And do you know that we have never laid eyes on each other until this morning, and we've kept in contact, and she's here today. That's the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's God working in my life and on a daily basis. And, you know, people, I believe that in order for me to keep what I have, I have to give it away. That's imperative. You know, the most precious gift of all is the gift of time. And that's what I try so desperately to do. And sometimes it's hard with my job. You know, being a sponsor is not easy. You know, but I truly believe that giving up your time is the best thing in the world. And I do want to tell you one little story about one lady that I was sponsoring, and she was a character. Sherry's her name, and she came into the program, and she had on cut off blue jeans, and she had a halter top, and she had a great big old tattoo running down her back of a panther, and she would say anything to anybody at any time, and she was wild and woolly. And she came up to me one day and she said, "Will you be my sponsor?" And I said, "Okay." I said, "We'll talk about it." And we started on this road of recovery and on this beautiful journey together. And about 6 months later, I finally went up to her and I said, "Now, Sherry, I've got to ask you something." I said, "Here you are just as wild and woolly. You'll say anything to anybody at any time." And I said, "Here I am, Miss Pollyanna." I said, "I can hardly say anything to anybody at any time." And I said, "Miss Prim and Proper." And I said, "I don't have any tattoos all over me or anything like that." And I said, "Why in the world did you ask me to be your sponsor?" And she put those hands on her hips, and she shook those hips, and she says, "Well, Lib, I look at it like this. I figured you could use a little bit of me, and I could use a little bit of you." And I said, "You know, that is so true, and I can use a lot of Sherry, and maybe one day I'll have a panther down my back, and I'll show you. I haven't gotten that far yet, though. It's all I can do is to get up in front of y'all right now." But Mary, sponsorship. Sponsorship is so important. Mary has just been a lifesaver to me. She told me, she says, "Libby, if you'll just make those amends," she said, "if you'll write down that amends list." You see, for all these years, I never did that because I didn't think I had harmed anybody. I really didn't. I didn't steal. Goodness, I stole a bottle of perfume when I was in the junior high school, and I came home and threw it on the ground and because I felt so guilty over it. I never stole. I never did anything like that. But I didn't think that I had harmed anybody. And I wrote down my amends list. This is when I was 5 years, 6 years sober. And I happened to put down my parents' name, of course. And I put their names down, and one thing led to another, and I had an opportunity to meet with my dad and my mom, and it just, you know, God just makes those things happen. And Mama is a teacher, and we were talking teacher things, and you see, I never do talk about alcoholism in front of them. And we were sitting there, and all of a sudden, my daddy got really quiet, and he looked at me, and he says, "Honey, I don't know where you got your alcoholism from, but if I had to bet, I bet you got it from me. I just don't drink anymore." And I knew without a shadow of a doubt that that was the opportunity that you said that God would provide if I just became willing. And I became willing that day, and I said a little prayer, and I said, "God, help me." And I looked at my mother and my daddy, and I said, "Mama, Daddy, I am so sorry for all the pain that I have caused you with all of my drinking." And my daddy began to tell me all about his alcoholism and his brother's drinking and the blackouts that he had experienced. And the only reason that he quit drinking was because of health problems. And I said that I was sorry, and they forgave me, and I'm so grateful for that. I'm so grateful for my sponsor because she shared that with me. She urged me to continue to do that because, you see, my daddy died after that. And I'm so grateful that I was able to do that. And I often wondered, you know, I said, "God, you know, are you working in my life? I've always believed in you." And I want to end in just a second with telling you this story. And this is a story that's a true story, and it's about my father and the way that God is in my works in my life. My father was very ill, and my mother had invited me to come over, and I went over to the house, and we didn't expect him to die right then, and I had bought a camera, and I asked my husband, I said, "Would you take a picture of us?" And he said, "Sure." So I first took a picture of Bob and my daddy, and then of my mother and my daddy, and then Bob took a picture of me and my daddy sitting on the bed. And 2 days later, my father died. And about two or three days later, my sister was still there, and I said to my sister and my mother, I'd like to go and get this film developed. And we knew that it was going to be kind of hard on the inside because of, it was so fresh. And so we went to this one-hour kind of things and took the pictures out to the car. And we were sitting there looking, and I looked at the one of Daddy and Bob, and it was great, and the one of Mama and Bob, and it was great. And I looked at the one of me and my daddy, and it was terrible, and you couldn't even see. It was all blurred. I had on a white jogging suit, and you couldn't hardly even see it at all. Of course, I got mad at Bob because he was the one that took the picture, you know. And my mother said, Libba, just don't worry about it. You've got other memories. Don't worry about it. And I said, you're right. And I put them away. Well, about a week or two later, I understand that you go through a cycle when someone dies. And I was crying, and I was home by myself. And I said, you know, God, I've always believed in you. I've given you so everything in my life. I said, I've just turned over everything, and I've trusted you. And I said, you know, I just wish I knew that my daddy was okay and my daddy was there with you. You know, I've heard of people having signs, and I said, I've never had a sign from you. I sure would like to know that my daddy's okay, and I sure would like to have a sign from you. And then I felt guilty, and I said, I didn't really say that. Just forget it. And I just kind of dropped it. Well, about 2 weeks later, a friend of mine from work came to me, and she gave me a picture frame, and she said, here, Libba, I wanted to share with you and give you this picture frame. I thought maybe you could like to put a picture of your dad or something in there, and I said, thank you. Well, I took it home and just kind of forgot about it. That was a Friday. And on that Sunday, I was home by myself, and I saw the picture frame, and I said, well, I need to find a picture. So I started to go through all the pictures that I had, and I got to the ones that I had taken at the one-hour place, and I got through. And I got to the one of my daddy and me, and it was as clear as the sky is blue. And instantly, the thought came to me, this is the sign that God has given you. Your daddy is okay, and he's here with me. And you know, I started to cry, and I got on my knees, and I thanked God for this sign. And I've shared this with people before, and some people laugh and say, oh, that's just technology. But you know, I choose to believe that is what God sent me. He sent that sign to me to let me know that he's always there with me. He's always taking care of me. And he always will, provided that I do the steps that are necessary to grow. I have to be willing. I have to walk through these fears. And for that, you know, I wouldn't take anything in the world for this program. I always wanted to be a lady. I always wanted to be a lady, and I'd get on those bar stools, and I would just fall off of them. I would just fall off, and I'd say, I'm going to be a lady tonight, and I'm going to walk to that bathroom, and I just never made it. Well, you know what? I can walk anywhere I want to walk, and I can hold my head up, and I'm so excited because I can be a lady. I have that self-respect. I have that dignity. I have that back, and for that I'm grateful. And in closing, I'd like to read to you a poem that I wrote, and I wrote it a number of years ago when I couldn't even share with anybody because I was so afraid of sharing my thoughts and my feelings, and I just want you to know how I feel about you. Questions never answered, joys never filled, life was a merry-go-round, yet it always stood still. Substitutes for a high, substitutes for a low, a battle within oneself, but on the surface it didn't show. How long was it going to last? Many years was the charade. Then she looked in the mirror at a different mold being made. The guilt was fading. The misery wasn't there. Only a heart full of love, ready to share.
The master tape cut off at this point. This is the end of the talk as we have it.